This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where over the past week, since we were last with you, in the Sky Bet Championship with shades of something Carla Kamey did at Wolves a few years ago, the Reading goalkeeper Raphael broke his hand punching the changing room whiteboard in frustration after his team surrendered a last-minute equaliser to QPR. In Sky Bet League One, Anthony Scully inspired Lincoln City back to winning ways with a hand in all five goals at Cambridge United. And in Sky Bet League 2, 40-year-old club legend and fitness coach Craig Dundas came off the bench as Sutton United recorded their first ever league win at home to Stevenage. It's the official EFL podcast. It's not been a great start to the Sky Bet Championship season for one of the three relegated clubs, Sheffield United. Although over the past few days, they have tripled their points tally, picked up their first win, and in their 6-2 hammering of Peterborough United, scored more goals in one league game than they had in their previous 17. Three of those six goals with assists from captain Billy Sharp. And I looked at that, Billy, and I thought to myself, now, is that coincidence that the goal king has turned provider? Is it Slaviša Jokanović's new style of play, or is it you modifying your game?
I'm not too sure, really. I do like to obviously get involved in play, link play. Obviously, everyone knows I like to be the one who puts them in the net. But
that's why I asked the question, mate.
Yeah. So I'm finding myself playing a lot more centrally. But that game, it just happened to be where I wasn't quite getting slid through onto goal. It was, you know, down the sides of the defenders, which I recognised that was what was hurting Peterborough, and we got a lot of joy from it. So obviously had to do that for the team, and it's always nice when you do, you know, put balls in the box that someone gets on the end of them. And I got some plaudits for the assists, which they don't mean a great deal to me, but it helped the team get 3 points and score six goals, which was a fantastic result. Just very disappointing that we couldn't back it up, you know, two or three days later, which was, you know, really disappointing, because it was a goal last kick of the game. So that would have set us up really nicely for you know, going into this weekend's game as well.
Yeah. I mean, listen, on the other hand, you know, there have been, if I think back to Chris Wilder's first season, the League One season, you had a very wobbly start then, didn't you? But still went on to have a magnificent season. And I know the gaffer as well at Fulham, I think his first 17 games in charge at Fulham, he only won four of them. So when there's a lot of change, Billy, you know, after all the time you've had in football, it takes a while to get into a new rhythm, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course, like last season, we had a change of manager, and you could see that Heckingbottom, the things he was trying to do, we started to get the hang of them towards the end of the season as well. But then obviously when the new manager comes in, he wants to play a different way, wants to bring in new players, and it took its time. It hasn't clicked as quickly as if we wanted to, but the last few games, I think our fans have been encouraged by the performance at least, which we've created a lot more. It's just the little things now what's hurting us. And, you know, I held my hand up. I gave a free kick away on the halfway line with a minute to go. And then we didn't clear the first ball and wasn't marking for the second one, which it hurts you in football if you don't do the small nitty-gritty things. And that's something that we can't rely on scoring six goals all the time. And something we need to tighten up on. But there's a long way to go in this season. And it's another game coming up at the weekend as well, which will be up on us before we know it.
Yeah. I mean, even after all this time in the game and the highs and lows in life as well, Billy, as you and I have had chats in the past, does it still sit with you if you do something like concede that late equaliser against Preston? Does it still sort of sit around your head for the next 24 hours, sort of niggling away at you?
Yeah, it will do until the kids come home from school, and then I'll have to put it to bed. You know, football is my life, but obviously the kids make me forget about the disappointments, and you have to move on and go into work tomorrow and go and put it right for the weekend. But I've sat here all day thinking about if I didn't get a free kick away, if we'd have cleared the first one, if and buts. But you know, that's football. It's the beauty of football. You have the setbacks and the joys of 3 days before where we was very comfortable in the game. So yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. We've not had the start that we've wanted to do, but we've managed to put in the performances the last couple of games, which, like I say, the fans have been really pleased with, which we need them on our side. It's such a big backing we've got at home. It drives us on to go and get the next goal.
Is it a very different regime under the new manager to the one that Chris Wilder ran? Very different personalities, relationships with the club, complete new era.
I think you can see that as well, which I think anybody who came in was always going to have that what's he like compared to the last manager. So, but I know that this was a popular choice by the fans and the players, so everyone's happy. It's just taking a little bit more time. So, but if we can keep the performances like we are doing, creating chances, you know, we scored 8 goals in the last 2 games, so that's a big plus. Obviously, we've conceded 4 in the last 2 games as well, which is a negative, but if we can balance them 2 out and start winning games, I'm sure we'll climb the table and we'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the season.
I mean, just looking at the big picture, can you identify a moment early last season where you realised the heroics of season 1 in the Premier League were not going to be replicated and that a cycle was coming to an end?
Yeah, I think a season always, you can see how the season's going to pan out after 12, 13, 14 games. And last season, I don't think we've won a game in that amount of games. And, you know, obviously there's not as many games in the Premier League. So we always knew it was going to be tough. We still believed that we could get out of it. But the little things that were going right for us in the season before, we was not quite getting the rub of the green. And I've said it before in many interviews, when you're winning, it's hard to lose. And when you're losing, it's so hard to get out of that rut. And we couldn't quite score the first goal last season. And we've only since recently, in the last couple of games where we've scored first, for some reason, it's a massive psychological boost in football. You feel like you've got this cushion and all the weight off your shoulders goes away. And it shouldn't be like that. We need to get away from playing like that. We need to be comfortable in our own ability. And, you know, if we do concede a goal, there's still going to be many minutes left to get a result. So, but I'm quietly confident that, you know, if we pick up 3 points on Saturday, we can keep going until the next international break. That's another thing at the minute. We're going to have another international break, which breaks up the season. I think the first one came at a good time. So hopefully we can get some momentum going into the next one. So we can hit the ground running after that one's over as well.
I fully appreciate this is a new regime, but I can't help but think that people from a national perspective would want to know the answer to this. Just that moment where, after all you'd achieved under Chris Wilder, he's no longer around. I'm guessing that is a very weird moment and a sad time as well, because especially for a boyhood blade who's in his third spell at the club and just loves it around the place. I mean, there must have been a little bit of a period of mourning inside you, wasn't it, that carried around for certainly a few weeks?
Yeah, I think it showed on the pitch as well. Few people, you know, not having that demands of that manager and maybe feeling sorry for themselves. But, it happens in football. You know, so Alex Ferguson did so well for so many years. I know he left on his own accord, but things do change. And we had to, like I say, get on with it. And you play for the fans. They're the ones who are there, you know, all their life, so you need to keep playing for them. And I feel as though we let them down last season after being so good the season before. So this season we need to make sure we're back on track, playing for the manager, playing for the fans, and more importantly, playing for each other, which, like I say, we have been doing that the last 2 games. And yeah, we've got 4 points is obviously not the 6 that we wanted, but it's a step in the right direction.
Have you all had the death stare from the new gaffer yet? He does have that steely mate. It's quite intimidating, isn't it? Except he once explained it to me that because English is not his first language, he's often concentrating very much on what you're saying and things. But it's frightening to be standing next to him, isn't it?
Yeah, he's, to be honest, he's a nice guy. He's quite funny as well, even when he's not trying to be because of his language barrier. But yeah, you can see that his concentration face is a pretty tough one, but he's a positive character and he's a manager that likes to assess things and then, you know, go through it the next day. So hopefully we can get a smile on the manager's face at the weekend.
Yeah, you don't want to be looking at that scowl too many times, do you? Was there any point during the sort of changeover, were you worried that your time at the club might be coming to an end?
No, not necessarily. I've made it quite clear. I'm 35, but I still feel 25. I'm going to continue to work hard on and off the pitch to try and keep playing for as long as I can. I've got this season left at Sheffield United, so if I can get a couple of goals, I'll knock it on the gaffer's door to try and get a new contract, because I'm not ready to stop yet, and I'd hate to have to go elsewhere to keep my career going. So that's up to me to keep working hard and try and get that, you know, next contract at the club, which hopefully I can do. And I want to be a part of this club till the day I call it a day. So hopefully that happens.
Yeah. Are you proud of yourself, mate, when you look at some of what you've achieved in your career? And I've been fortunate enough to share a few of those. I mean, I was there for the hat-trick against QPR when you kind of got going in season two of Spell 2. I think I was there with you in the tunnel at Southampton, wasn't I, when you got promoted down there, the 4-0 against Coventry down there.
I remember that one. I think it was Richard Chaplow who was swearing, and we had to cut it for a little bit. Obviously, no, I am proud. I'm more pleased that I've got my kids and, you know, my wife and family that can share these, you know, promotions and good times, because, you know, when you're younger, you don't really think about that. It's just, it is football, and you're selfish in a way. But to have my kids experience it has been unbelievable. Don't really think, the youngest one still doesn't really understand, I don't think, what we did in the last few seasons, because he's one who is very harsh on me at the minute. Daddy, you didn't score again last night. And I'm like,
oh wow.
Yeah, and even though I've been happy with my personal performances, he's the same as me, the youngest one. I'm all about the goals, and he's only happy whenever I've got on the score sheet. So at the minute, I'm not in his good books.
Yeah. And does that gnaw away at you as well, Billy? Does, you know, if you do go two, three, four games without scoring goals, it really starts to grind away at you, and you become a miserable old beggar in the corner of the living room.
Yeah, I've played the last three 90 minutes, which I'm more than capable of doing. And, you know, I'm happy the gaffer's doing that, because I'll get on the goal trail and I'll get 4, 5 and 6. I know that I do that in my career, and I've been happy with my own personal performance the last three games. My link-up play, my hold-up play has been good for the team. And, you know, I think the gaffer recognises that. But me personally, I know that it's going to come. And when it does come, they'll flow. So just need to keep grinding away at it. And as a team, we are getting better. And the confidence is coming back. I can feel it.
Yeah, I can keep hearing you sort of pitching to stay involved as a player, but are you starting to plan for a few years down the line when you retire? Would you like to stay around the club? Could there be a backstairs role for you? Have you got plans?
Yeah, I was supposed to be at St George's Park in the summer, but with my injury, I had an operation in the summer, so I wasn't able to make that. I've got a little bit of work to do just to complete my A licence, and then I'll be in a good position for whenever that does come around. Obviously, then it's the pro license, the next step after that. But, you know, that is a real commitment and hard work. So I'll be concentrating on, you know, my playing career before I do that bit. But no, I've thought long and hard about that, and I'd like to give it a go. I'm going to be bold about it. I'd like to be a manager. I help out with my 8-year-olds. You know, training sessions, and that can be tough, challenging at times, because the hardest thing is to get them to listen. But even when a session comes off with them, it's very pleasing, and it's nice to give back as well, because they seem to listen a little bit to me for 20 minutes anyway of the hour session. So it's good to give out sessions for the experience as well.
Yeah. Well, we've enjoyed listening to you as well. Billy, great to talk to you. Shall I sign you off as assist king or goal king? Which would you prefer?
The goal king, if you can, please. I don't like the assist king.
All right, mate. We'll let that go. Great to talk to you, Billy. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Glenn. Thanks a lot.
Yep, there goes the goal king. Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, Fulham's unbeaten start to the season was ended at Blackpool, and QPR's at Bournemouth. It's now 4 wins in 5 for resurgent Huddersfield Town, but Nottingham Forest's worst start for over a century continues.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
There were 43 goals in Sky Bet League One last weekend, including 7 at Portman Road, leaving Ipswich Town still looking for their first win. But Ian Evatt's Bolton Wanderers cementing their reputation as one of the country's outstanding away teams over the past season and a bit. Is that an indicator, do you think, Ian? Is that a sort of conscious way that you play, the fact that you are so good on your travels?
I think it's a mindset thing, Clem. I think we don't go anywhere to draw. We're not fearful of the opposition. We have firm belief in ourselves and what we try and do and implement in our game plan. And we see it the same way. Obviously, we have the added advantage of having a fantastic home support, but our away fans travel in numbers well as well. So we go everywhere and try and be as expansive as we possibly can and take the game to the opposition.
Just looking at my list of questions here, because I do actually do some preparation, listeners to the official EFL podcast might be surprised. Are too many clubs fearful away from home? So you've kind of answered, do you think too many clubs go away from home and they just try and shut up shop and nick a point rather than three?
I think so. I obviously, this is what we all love about football, that we all see the game in different ways and people have different opinions. You know, my opinion is to go and attack every game and try and win every game. You know, I don't want to go anywhere to set up to draw. We judge ourselves and pride ourselves on what we do with the ball and without it. And, you know, as much as we respect the opposition and do our due diligence, it boils down to self-belief and belief in our football team.
Yeah. You see, this is what I also love about football, that I suppose, stereotypically, people might have appreciated your position as a player and then thought that would be your approach to football. Obviously, you and I have had two or three chats since your management career started and I know different, but do you think perceptions initially were that you would shut up shop and park the bus and hold a very firm back line and go the other route?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was a big, ugly defender, so everyone thinks...
That's what I was trying to say, but I didn't dare.
Yeah, I mean, people would have obviously thought that that was the way that I saw the game, but in that time, I had some very attacking managers that I learnt a lot off, and Ollie in particular, that Blackpool team I played in, was so attacking and expansive, and I just enjoyed playing in it. So even though I was a defender and it left me 1v1, 2v2, I still enjoyed playing in it so much. And as I've said many times, at the end of the day, strip it all back, football is an entertainment industry and people want to be entertained.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I guess having been part of something like that Blackpool experience, it opens your mind to the field of possibilities, i.e. that a lot is possible despite perceptions of resources.
Absolutely, and that's something that is, you know, massively, in my view, mistaken in football, that people think if you spend the most money, it guarantees you success. It doesn't. It complicates things. You know, there's a lot of things that go into making a successful football team, lots of ingredients to build that recipe. And obviously, you know, money and finances and recruitment is a huge part of that, but it's not the only part of that. So if you haven't got that kind of money, how can you be better in other areas? You know, for instance, your coaching, recruiting to a budget is vital. And then obviously the fan base, the support, the football club in general, you know, giving and setting the right culture and environment for your players and the team to thrive in.
You mentioned recruitment. I wondered how much last season's recruitment is now benefiting you, that maybe you had in mind players that had stretch in them, not just to deliver step one of the rebirth of the club.
Yeah, that's obviously a big important thing for us, is that we've had these players now for over a season, most of them. So they're used to doing the way we work and the way we play, and getting more confident within that and improving within that. We did recruit players, some from higher divisions that have maybe, you know, fell out of love with their football club or just need a change, and some that we saw improvement in, younger players with good attributes that just need time and coaching. And we've put that together, and now we're seeing the benefit of that. I mean, Ipswich, for instance, on Saturday, the opposite end of that spectrum, they've recruited 19 new players this summer. It's virtually impossible to hit the ground running. You know, I don't think even the best could, you know, get 19, 20 strangers together and put them in on a football pitch and get them playing immediately. These managers need time, and hopefully Paul gets time to build what he wants at Ipswich Town.
And of course, you know exactly about that, because you're starting 11... The very first game of last season was a completely new setup compared to the 11 players that had started the preceding game of the previous season? I think there is a question in there, and I hope it made sense to you.
It does, and that's a good example, because October, November last year, after a really poor start for us in League Two, it could have easily gone the other way for me, and I'm very fortunate that I had the backing of my board. They spent a lot of money to bring me in from Barrow and had a massive belief in me and what I was trying to do. And also, probably fortunate, and one of the main benefits of the pandemic is there were no supporters in stadiums, which, you know, when you're getting poor result after poor result and the fans are there week in, week out, it can become a bit of a toxic atmosphere. We didn't have that because supporters weren't allowed in. So it gave us more time, really, to get things right and get things where we wanted them to be.
Yeah, it's really weird, isn't it, that through this sort of whole ghastly 18 months that the whole of the world has had, that there are little benefits like that, that it allowed you to set your values and beliefs, to get them entrenched, you know, that culture was enabled to develop.
Absolutely that. And, you know, it gave us time to educate our fan base. That, no disrespect to previous years, but Bolton haven't been a possession-based team for a long, long time. They've not been, you know, an expansive, possession-based, attractive football team. They've got results and had success doing things a different way, and who's to say that's wrong? But, you know, it gave us time for the fans to get used to what we were trying to do, and now they've come back into the stadiums this season. We've kind of benefited from that because they're very much on board and seeing things that we're trying to do.
That attraction of yours to entertaining football, does that mean that if you nick the odd result, but maybe the style of play has not been great, that it actually diminishes your enjoyment of the moment?
Absolutely.
Seriously?
That's my football snobbery. It is, and it is. It's probably an issue of mine and a weakness of mine, but for me, the holy grail is to win games consistently, but to do it in an attacking brand and possession-based brand, which everyone wants to watch and see. Once you get those two together, a bit like Pep at Man City, who I'm a huge fan of, that is the holy grail and what every coach wants.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, I was struck by your self-confidence over the last couple of years, but I'm kind of thinking of how that is enhanced by the fact that so early in your management career, you have achieved promotions. And that, I guess, that kind of underlines and firms up everything that you believe.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. But also in those times, I've had rough times as well. And I've had testing times where it would have been easy to come away from my philosophy. But if I don't truly believe in it myself, how am I going to get anybody else to believe in it? You know, last season, we mentioned the start of last season, last campaign, 19 new players, had really poor results. We were still 19th in January and managed to get promoted. And then at Barrow, we had 7 points from our first 9 games the season we won the league. So we have had rough times where, as I said, it could have been easy to come away from our philosophy and be harder to beat and be more direct. But for me, that isn't belief. The true test of character and belief is when things aren't going so well. And we stuck to our guns, just tried to be better at what we did, and eventually that paid off.
But there'll be a lot of people listening to this from all sorts of walks of life who maybe have those moments where their own principles are potentially going to be compromised. So who kept you true to your course during those dark moments?
Myself. You know, it's an easy answer, but it is myself. I've done loads of reading on leadership and mentality. So many books I've read. Obviously, you need your family and your friends around you, because management is a very lonely place at times, especially on the back of a poor result and a run of poor results. So you need them to build you back up and take your mind off things. But also, it's self-analysis and that belief of, what can I do better? Am I doing everything I can possibly do to guarantee us and help us get results on Saturday? And if you are, and you can look at the man in the mirror and say, you know, I'm doing everything I can, then you have to live with that and live with the way you see the game and your philosophy. And as I said, if you don't truly believe in it yourself, how are you ever going to get everyone else to believe in it? And the most important people you need to get believing in your philosophy are the players, because the players are the ones that have to go and implement it on a Saturday. I as a manager, draw the outline for them, draw the picture, but they have to be the ones to go out and colour it in. And that's how it is at football. So yeah, give them belief, give them the courage to go out and play that way and hopefully enjoy it.
Can I ask you a really testing question?
Yes.
What's your Achilles heel? Yours personally.
Set pieces.
Defending them or not getting them right in implementation at the other end?
Both, because I've been a player for 21 years and there is nothing worse as for a player than walking through set plays for and against. And I know they have a massive importance in the game, but I just don't have that fire like I do for my possession-based attacking football. I feel almost guilty on them that they have to be out there working through it. So we try and do it as best and as quickly as we possibly can. But that is a stage. I mean, this season I've managed to bring in a first-team coach, Sam Hurd, who I played with and had at Barrow, who is a completely different character and actually loves set plays and loves to work on them and look at them and see what we can do better. So that's the perfect marriage for me, that I've now got someone that has that passion that can take that, you know, guilt away from me and make sure the players are doing their work on them for a Saturday, because it can win you games, there's no doubt about that.
And when you recruited Sam, was this something you were conscious of, that he had a real passion for this particular area and you knew it was an area that you didn't enjoy, you've just said you see as a weakness, or is it something that's kind of evolved over the time you two have been together of late?
No, I do know that he does like set plays, and obviously me and my assistant Peter Atherton, we're really the other way, where we enjoy the finer details of football, you know, our midfield rotations, how we play out from the back against a man-for-man press, you know, our attacking movements, our combinations. That's what excites us. We needed someone to come in that could really fill that void on set plays, and Sam's done that.
Yeah. And again, I guess that's another step for you, isn't it? Because the higher you climb on the management ladder, the more bits you are going to have to delegate. I'm assuming at Barrow you were pretty much in the thick of everything, but the higher up you go, the more that's at stake, the more of a kind of entourage and backroom staff you're going to have. So this is a skill, recruiting the right people in itself.
Absolutely it is. And recruitment, players and staff-wise, is vital to anything. But I will always want to be on the grass. It's just who I am as a person. I don't want to be an office manager or a manager that steps out with a cup of tea on a Friday afternoon and says, "Are we ready to play tomorrow, lads?" You know, and just be a motivator. I want to be a coach. You know, I look at the best coaches in world football and with envy, really, and learn so much from them. And it is a real passion of mine to get out there day to day and work on things. And then the rewards you get off the back of that on Saturdays when you see plans come together is amazing.
On a scale of 1 to 10, if Bolton Wanderers were at 0 when you took over and the objective is to get to 10, what number are you at so far, do you think?
I think we're at 4 or 5.
Okay.
I think we've taken a huge step back towards where we want to be last season in promotion, and we've started this season well, but there's still loads more to come. We're still improving all the time. I believe this club should be at the top of the Championship at the very least. That's our aim, that's our belief, and we're laying down the foundations to get us there. But it's just the start. We've got a long, long way to go.
I want to ask you about the club's stance, the principles that are in place, very vociferous in response to the racist abuse on social media of Elias Kachunga. I mean, again, led by you in the dressing room, I guess, but it just goes to show that the club were so forthright in their statement that there's a unity there as well about those overriding core and right principles of the whole club.
Yeah, and that comes down from our chairman, Sharon Britton, and the rest of the owners, really. A football club needs leadership, and everything filters down from the top. And Sharon is a wonderful, wonderful woman, one of the most inspiring people I've met in my entire life. And it's great for football that we've got her. She's great for football in general. And I think in the coming years, we speak about it all the time. We want to be in our own League of One and set precedents. And there, this is a step towards doing that, really.
Wow. That is amazing. Remiss of me, I should have asked you, have you got a tip on a good leadership book for everybody? You mentioned you read lots and lots of them. What comes to mind? It might be your favourite or one you're reading at the moment, someone we can all write down?
Yeah, and there's one if I don't know if you're an American sports fan or not, but a guy called Bill Walsh, who was the San Francisco 49ers head coach in the 80s, had, you know, Joe Montana. When he first took over at San Francisco, they were a shell of a club and had no success. Within 7 years, I think they'd won 5 Super Bowls, and it all came down from the culture and environment that he set. It's a fantastic book, and I recommend anybody to read it.
Yeah, can you remember roughly what it's called off the top of your head?
Yeah, The Score Takes Care of Itself.
The Score Takes Care of Itself. Good. I'm not the only one that's writing that down, I'm absolutely sure. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, it's leader Sunderland's best start to a season in over a century. Despite 2 more goals for Morecambe's Cole Stockton, another 7-goal thriller at the Mazuma Stadium was won by AFC Wimbledon. I actually caught the same train as them back to London on Saturday night. They were mid-sing-song when I walked through their carriage. And after their 4th league defeat in 5, Charlton Athletic have now made their worst start in 15 years. I mean, the other side of Saturday's game was Paul Cook described it as the lowest point in his career. Just that camaraderie between managers. You're obviously rivals. You obviously want to outdo each other for the points. But there must be, I mean, obviously a great deal of sympathy and empathy there, Ian. It must be a real challenging one, that, to have a beer with somebody after the match. But you've had very different days.
It is, and even more so for me, because I was his captain for 2 years at Chesterfield, and we won League Two together and got into the playoffs in League One. It's not nice. It's never nice, but, you know, hopefully he listened to my experience, which as a young manager, sometimes it's hard to get your point across to more senior ones, especially with the success that he's had. But I've been through that the year before, and I know exactly how he's feeling. I know exactly what he wants, but, and even the best sometimes need reminding at just how good they are. And I know that he's a very, very good manager, and I know that given time he will turn that club around and they'll have success again. So hopefully he gets the time he deserves.
Yeah, I mean, there are already signs of poor form and definitely inconsistency amongst the division's promotion favourites. Does that surprise you, or with the amount of managerial experience there is in this particular division, it's absolutely par for the course?
I think it's a really good league. I think it's improved no end since certainly I played in it. I think every team more or less now is well coached. I think that's the difference for me now. There aren't any weak links. Every team has analysts. They do, you know, stuff on the opposition. There's no hiding place anymore. There's no secrets. Everybody is well coached, and it is really competitive from top to bottom. And I think we're going to go on to see that this season. It's going to be a really tight league, top to bottom, and anything can happen.
When I mean, we're talking to you on your day off, and I can see you're sitting in your kitchen there. I mean, are you literally forensically reading up on lots of the clubs that are coming up, watching all the highlights back? Are you quite sort of studious about all the other teams in the division?
You have to be. And one thing I try to do as a manager is take excuses off the table. And as I said, management is a lonely place. And I believe you get out of anything what you put in, and we put in many, many hours, even on our day off. I'm watching opposition, I'm watching Rotherham for Saturday, making sure our game plan's correct, making sure we've got the right detail, set play detail, open play detail, where their strengths and weaknesses are, how do we, you know, take advantage of those. It never stops. It never stops.
Is it obvious to you who the leading rivals in the division are for those promotion spots? Is it already starting to emerge? The fact that Sunderland are top, that Liam's obviously had a surge at Wigan, etc.?
Obviously Sunderland will be where they believe they should be. I think everybody else, it's still very much up for grabs. I think we are quietly confident, but that's all it is at the moment. Wigan have obviously had a great start, and obviously Liam laid the foundations towards the end of that season, last season, to build on this season. Obviously Ipswich, I think, will come on strong, there's no doubt. They've got too good a squad and too good a manager not to. And then other than that, you've got the Wickhams, the Rotherhams, who have come down from the Championship, Sheffield Wednesdays. You know, it's a really good league. And it's a long old season. There's still, 39 games left for us, so 39 more opportunities to go out and show what we can do, and hopefully get us there or thereabouts.
Yeah. Sunderland are where they believe they should be. Are you learning the arts of mind games there, Mr. Everett, a little bit? Was that look, carefully selected language?
Everybody has their own ambition and pressures, don't they? Some clubs, there are more pressures than others. And going back to our initial conversation, that comes down to money spent, support or expectation. So, of course, you know, more clubs have pressure. I think we're in a pretty good place and we feel like we can attack it knowing that we don't have those same pressures.
Impeccably handled. Meanwhile, in Sky Bet League 2, Hartlepool United have won their first four home games for the first time in 65 years. It's now four consecutive defeats for Mansfield Town and just one win in 17 for Scunthorpe United. What are the big differences, Ian, that you've spotted so far between League 2 and League 1?
I think League 1 is less physical than League 2. I think League 2 is a real physical challenge. I think you've got really experienced, wily footballers in that division who know how to play the dark arts of the game. You know, those finer details, win refereeing decisions, play for territory, set plays, physically make sure that you have to stand up and be counted in every game. I think that's the more challenging part of League Two. I'd say League One is a lot more technical, a lot more tactical, and more towards what it looks like in the Championship.
And do you still keep your eye on the division below? You're just looking at, you know, maybe managers that you admire or obviously potentially players that might emerge that might add a bit of something to you? Or have you sort of set your sights on the division above now in terms of your out-of-division monitoring?
No, obviously we want to be in the Championship and that's our aim, but we take a note of every level and I'm always looking at who's having success, who's not. Rob Edwards at Forest Green, who are top of the league at the moment, is a very, very close friend of mine. We played together for many years. We speak regularly on the phone. I'm delighted for him being a new manager and having initial success. And obviously Barrow will always have a place in my heart for what I achieve there, and I keep a close eye on them as well.
Yeah, of course. Blackpool, you and Rob.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, of course. Quarter of the season for me from Rob. Asked about what he'd learned of his first league game in charge. He said never to wear chinos in the technical area because it had been an absolute deluge of rain and he just had that big, awful, wet man stain right across the top of his thighs. Yeah.
Well, Rob's a very attractive young man, so I'm guessing he tried to dress accordingly, but that will change, and now he's back in his tracksuit, which is good to see.
Yeah, exactly. Get him back in the bread and butter stuff. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for sharing and congratulations on what you've achieved so far.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wasn't that a great chat? Big thank you to Ian Everett and, of course, to Billy Sharp. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.